The next gentleman is coming, Chris Dunham. Good friend. He's our international ambassador. He was sharing with me this week that he just had a 65th trip back to India. And in these trips, he takes the Ziglar message and the Ziglar philosophy. In fact, Chris has actually endowed a scholarship program for seminary students in Dad's name. Chris will probably tell you more of the details, but literally hundreds of presentations at the same venues as Dad. And he started off at our company asking, how can I serve? And he's been serving every day since then. You're going to love Chris because he speaks from his heart. He walks his talk. One of my friends said, hey, you know, I really like your dad. He really walks his talk, and you know he's a good talker. Chris is a good walker and a good talker. Please bring up my brother, Mr. Chris Dunham.
Well, as Julie was talking, the only thing I could think of is we were so poor we couldn't even afford chipmunks. So I grew up on the other side of the world, and my journey with Mr. Z is quite radically different. Before I digress into the crux of the message, which I titled Living a Legacy, I wanted to give you the bookends of my journey. If I had to encapsulate my journey with him, I had the privilege of shining his shoes in rural Iowa when nobody knew who I was. And I had the rare distinction of helping him walk and have a little balance towards the end of the life when he was forgetting who he was. I truly had a chance to experience this thing. The difference between a legacy and an inheritance is quite radical. If you're building your business so that you can leave an inheritance, those that get it are really glad you're dead. Okay? But if you're building it to leave a legacy makes you an heir. So I want to create a picture for you. You can go through X amount of certification, you can go through X amount of unification. But at the back of your mind, the burning image is, are you capable of being a torchbearer to a reputation that took a long time to build. Julie mentioned about those journeys we took, and for a long time we were on a private plane. It was her, Mrs. Z, Mr. Ziglar, and myself. And I remember on one of those episodes, between the privilege of flying private, I told him, I said, Mr. Ziglar, why didn't we requisition this luxury much earlier? I'm kind of digging it. He says, there is no we. This is because of me. Your job is to tell the pilot I'm ready. And I want you to hang on to that thought, because there was not a moment where a message was not a lesson. Very important to understand. A lot of the cutesy quotes and all that you hear have tremendous depth to them. Well, the humbling aspect of this room, it was in the first week of October in 1991, when I joined the Ziglar Corporation, that we were sent to this venue for 5 days to go through training. I went through my first Born to Win seminar as a new hiree for the Ziglar Corporation in this very room in 1991. In April of 1996, I had the privilege of being with him in the Philippines during Holy Week, at which time he heard me do his goal-setting program. And he asked me if I would consider, because he was wanting to shorten his schedule, that there were 2 one-hour slots that would open up if I would be willing to do it. So in this very room, in May of 1996, I graduated to being a speaker. I flap my gums now in 65 countries on 6 continents. And wherever I have gone, the one thing I have always tied back is this. You cannot live a legacy if you do not have reverence to to the body whose legacy you want to continue. It is not just a program for me. It is not a book. In Las Colinas, Texas, I have a training center called the Ziegler Summit, where if you walk into that room on the wall, you will see the famous quote, "You can have everything in life you want if you just help enough other people get what they want." The fascinating part about that training center that cost upwards of $300,000 to build, it was a complete gift to me by a man named Victor Abraham, who never met Mr. Ziegler, but says Mr. Ziegler changed his life. Because I had that close association, he gifted me a center, no strings attached, proving that you can have everything in life you want if you just help enough other people get what they want. You want to live a legacy worth remembering? Remember this. The journey is not nearly as important. Mr. Z always said, when you feel at the bottom of the valley and you feel your teeth kicked in, and you feel life is making an example of you, remember it, document it, and indelibly make a memory of it. Because 25 years later, what you thought was an example being made of you is the illustration you will share with other people who will say your life is one worthy of following. Now let's just take a quick trip through this. The first thing is, believe you belong. Believe you belong. I wrote here, seeing the destination. As Tom mentioned, I grew up in rural India. We were poor. We were so poor, we go to Kentucky Fried Chicken, lick other people's fingers. Okay? We had running water. If you needed it, you ran and got it. And that's not reasonably far from the truth. My daddy did study under a street light. My mom was a child bride. And I remember sitting on that beach in that nondescript southern Indian town, looking at the ships on the horizon, wondering if any of them would have my story. A game we played. I wonder where that ship is going. Will I ever see that destination? I remember in Panama when we were there and we were at the Miraflores Locks, and I had organized the privilege for Mr. Ziegler, Rich, who's passed on as well, was with us. Mr. Ziegler, Rich, and myself, we were in Panama. And in the Miraflores Locks, I got him the honor of twisting that 1913 computer and letting 50 million gallons of water flow into a lock and let a ship pass across the isthmus, clearing two oceans. And there's a picture of that. And I remember as he twisted that lock, he went out onto the balcony to see. And I saw a tear streaking down. I said, "Mr. Ziegler, what's wrong?" He says, "Today happened because you believed in me more than anything else at the moment." And the reason I give you that, seeing the destination. He says, "I never imagined, I'm a little kid from Yazoo City, Mississippi, I never imagined that I'd get a chance to do this, because in the Miraflores Locks are pictures of John Wayne and Sophia Loren doing that stuff, so you had to be a real celebrity. But the guy who was the engineer who managed the locks happened to be a big Ziegler fan." But the reason I share that story is that conversation began one day innocuously when I got a call. I was selling international seminars and all at that time. The phone rings and a man says, "How much bringing Zig Ziglar Panama City?" I said, $75,000. He said, "And?" I said, "And first class expenses for four." He said, "And?" I said, "And a trip through the Panama Canal." See, as long as he was saying "and," I kept selling. For two reasons. One is, if I'm sending him, I'm going. And if I was going, I had to take Rich with me, so we had to get four first-class seats. I remember sitting next to one of the Panamanian baseball players playing Nintendo all the way down there. But when I finished that conversation, I remember our IT guy at that time, Jerry Kemp, was sitting next to me. He said, "Dude, you just asked for $75,000 like you were asking for peanuts at a ballpark." I said, "Jerry, after $1, it's all asking." But see, in my heart of hearts, I knew and I believed I was giving away a $150,000 speaker at a discount. Seeing the destination. How far ahead can you go beyond where you are now? Are you looking at a room with people? Well, Mike Duncan is here. He shared something very profound with me Why do you do what you do? He showed me a set of notes he had, including Amy Jones' notes, Zig Ziglar's notes, and my notes, from an event we did, I think it was in Memphis, or maybe somewhere else around that part, but in October of 2002. And today he brought it and asked if I would sign it. That's almost 16 years ago. I bet he didn't imagine we'd have this moment. But remember what I said. The examples you're going through will become the illustrations if you only see the destination. And the destination has to be vivid. It has to have people, it has to have places, it has to have all the components. Second, studying the distance. The story is told of Francis Thompson. Francis Thompson was brilliant in his mind, but he was an opium addict. He had been rejected from some of the august schools in England, Cambridge and Oxford to be particular. 7 different rejections because of his opium addiction. But he was brilliant. And he would write letters to the London Times about the ills of society. And one day, on the banks of the River Thames, where he huddled at night, someone gave him the Old Testament. In that, they gave him the story of Jacob, a man who ran. See, Jacob never studied the distance of his deceit. He deceived a birthright. He deceived a blessing. He went to the far country, was deceived in order to marry his favorite Rachel. He had to marry Leah first. On his way back, he was coming back and had that confrontation moment with God. And in that confrontation moment, he was asked the question, "Who are you?" And for the first time, he answered accurately. He said, "I'm Jacob. Because you've answered accurately, I'm naming you Israel." Biblical story. Now, some of you may not understand the theological tracking of that, but Zig Ziglar's entire legacy was based on being mental, physical, and spiritual. I remember one time we were in Phoenix, and a lady got upset because Mr. Ziglar had shared his faith, just like I'm doing now. And the lady gave me a note, and when we sat in the limo, she said, "He said, Krish, looks like she was upset." I said, "Yes, sir, I'm the vice president in charge of telling you that other people are upset." He said, "Looks like it's a barn burner," what he called a long letter. I said, "Yeah." He says, "Just give me the gist." I said, "She's upset that you mentioned your faith." He said, "How many were in the room?" I said, "About 300. He said, "And one person reacted?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Replying to her is just bad marketing. Throw it away." Think of that statement. And let's go back to Jacob. See, Francis Thompson ran from what was his rightful inheritance. I'm going to share a poem with you, and I want you to track with me. On the banks of the River Thames, when he found the story of Jacob, here's what Francis Thompson wrote. "O world invisible, we view thee. O world intangible, we touch thee. O world unknowable, we know thee. Inapprehensible, we clutch thee. Does the fish soar to find the ocean? The eagle plunge to find the air? That we ask of the stars in motion, if they have rumor of thee there. Not where the wheeling systems hearken, and our benumbed conceiving soars. Drift of pinions would we hearken, beats at our own clay shuttered doors. The angels keep their ancient places, turn but a stone and make a wing. Tis ye, tis your estranged faces that miss the many splendored thing. For when so sad thou canst not sadder, crying upon thy so sore loss, shall shine the traffic of Jacob's ladder, pitch between heaven and Charing Cross. Yea, in the night my soul, my daughter, cry by the hems, and lo, Christ walking on the water, not of Gennesaret, but Thames." If you want to understand this legacy, I'm sorry, there's no easy way around it. The tridimensional nature of man, the mental attributes that allow you to think, the physical attributes that allow you to perform, and the spiritual attributes that guide that value system, in his mind, were non-negotiable. Third, settling the difference. You'll have naysayers in your life. You'll have many naysayers in your life. We were coming back from Salt Lake City, Utah, and we took an earlier flight. He was across the aisle from me. In those days, I traveled on his lifetime air pass. But this was one of those things where we were not up front. We were at the back of the bus, but he said, "Let's go." I think we were in seat 28 or whatever it was. Well, the seat next to me was empty, but the seat near the window held a lady. she was crying. Not just ordinary tears, just big wailing sobs, the kind that comes with, I have failed as a human being kind of wailing. When I talk about settling the difference, what he says is, if there is something to be done, and he would often quote William James, the founder of modern psychology, do it immediately and do it flamboyantly. Don't put anything away in the back burner that can be addressed now. What's the worst that can happen? Watch me carefully. He would always say, if you try something you've never tried before and you fall flat on your face, you break even. You didn't have it to begin with. You gave it a shot. You came up short. Big whoop. So he reached over and he always called me boy. He's a boy. I said, sir. He says, looks like you got your work cut out for you till we get to Dallas. Now, here's a lady who's crying, and he's pretty convinced that I need to get involved in this mess. Now, this is right after 9/11. People like me are not supposed to talk on planes. In fact, I jokingly, after 9/11, I had to go through this whole explanation. Everybody said, all you Indians look like, no, see, the difference between Indians and terrorists, see, we're 7/11, not 9/11. Okay? We don't like to harm airports. We like working at them. So I had to look at this lady and say, ma'am, is there something wrong? And she said, I'm a failure as a mother. I said, ma'am, that's not possible. This man has been my teacher, and he often tells me that you can fail at something. You cannot fail as someone. God loves you too much. She said, where was God when my daughter had an eating disorder? I just dropped her off at an eating disorder clinic. I failed as a mother. Now, I know you guys have just been through goal setting, and you get all the physical attributes of that and all of that, and I understand that. Ladies, zero is not a size. It's not even a number. Okay, I can't imagine you wanting to be zero. That's less than nothing. You know, about the only time I'll believe somebody is when Miss America wins the pageant and they ask her, what would you do in case you won? And she says, I'd like to eliminate world hunger. I believe her. She just participated in it. There's a difference between health and vanity. A healthy self-pride is different from vanity. Vanity is false pride. Well, her daughter had succumbed to the false pride, and here was a mother feeling she had failed in her very birthright. I talked to her, we chatted all the way, I had the privilege of leading her to Christ before we landed, and the most excited email we got was sometime later when we sent her some resources. Settle the difference. If you feel, it's just like Beth Moore saying that one day she was in the airport and she just had this urge to go brush somebody's hair. What's the worst that can happen? What's the worst that can happen? Think about it. Think it through. 97, top performance, we wrote this. 97% of the people in this world operate in the comfort zone. Good, honest, tax-paying, law-abiding. 3% operate in the effective zone. The difference between comfort and effectiveness is growth, and growth is uncomfortable. I've lived in Texas now 32 years. I've yet to see a live armadillo. They're always dead in a 70-mile-an-hour speed zone. And every time I see a dead armadillo, I wonder why armadillos don't occasionally have a gathering like this and say, dude, dad died here. Mom died here. Everybody we know died right here. Let's find a school zone. Sometimes you have to slow down. Sometimes you have to slow down to speed up. Ignorance is not a medal. Quit wearing it. Settle the difference here and now. I was speaking in Arizona one time, and a lady took offense when I said, I'm the real Indian. She said, I can't believe you said that. I said, why? She said, that's politically incorrect. I said, which part? She says, I'm a full-blooded Native American Indian. I said, Columbus was looking for me. He found you by mistake. And since we're a sales organization primarily, regardless of what you prepare and participate in, if you don't go out and, as my colleague Brian Flanagan says, sell something, it's just a big halo adjustment that you go through every year. There's certain things in this world that shouldn't be sold, and you shouldn't be buying them. Settle the difference. If I see ignorance, I stop it. And I see it on display when I travel around. A lady in an airport was making a total nuisance of herself. I don't use profanity. She was acting like an equine posterior. She didn't want to show her ID. Settle the difference. It'll lighten your load and strengthen you as a carrier. When the celebrity was going off on the, imagine, she's mouthing off at the only person in the airport who can't fly a plane. I tapped the celebrity on the shoulder. I said, on Thursdays in Terminal D at Gate 30, all of us celebrities have to show our ID. She said, who are you? I said, Gandhi. If somebody has to tell you who you are, you ain't. Which brings me to the last point, which is spreading the discourse. What are you going to do with this information? An information that sometimes is emotional overload. Sometimes it's spiritual overload. Sometimes it's tactical overload. Sometimes it's practical overload. What are you going to do with this information? Tom mentioned, I've set up a scholarship in India at a seminary called the Ziegler Legacy Fund, where annually two kids from impoverished backgrounds will get an advanced theological education, but the only goal is that they have to take that education and go back into the rural part of India and plant a church. Mr. Ziegler was my spiritual father. It is because of him that I know the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. He was present at my baptism in October of 1993. When my father met Zig Ziglar for the first time, my father said, I was afraid you would fall in infertile soil when you chose to make a living in another country far away from us. But today I met the gardener. A gardener of hope. When I first spoke in the Georgia Dome in front of 35,000 people, I'd finally arrived. And I went into that limo, and this time he waited for me. He says, today he will ride home with me. And from then on, I always traveled with him. As he waited for me, he knew I would be shaking. I was 35,000 people at the football stadium. They put me between Rudy Giuliani and Jimmy Carter to stop a fight, but they put me there. And when I hugged my spiritual father and told him, how can I ever thank you for betting on this lowly immigrant who started in your company as a marketer, made me a VP of global operations, sent me all over the world, that today people would walk up to me and write check and build me a building in your name. How can I ever thank you? And these are the words he gave me, which you need to take to heart. He said, son, all I did was open one door, but I trained you so well, you ran in looking for light switches. Now go flip light switches around the world. Spread the discourse. You've heard many definitions of success. This is mine. Success is going to where success is and hoping that by sheer centripetal force you're pulled in. Success is going to where success is and hoping that by sheer centripetal force, just on the periphery, you're pulled in. That picture is from 2005 when I took him to India. Even till today, people will come. My last trip in the Philippines, a young man named Chinky Tan came to me, who's a very acclaimed motivational speaker in the Philippines now. He said, Krish Dunham, how can I ever thank you for bringing Zig Ziglar to Manila in 1994, when as a young rookie, we did not know what public speaking was, and you guys made it cool. And when I saw Mr. Ziglar do what he was doing, I knew that's what I wanted to do. And that whole evening, he was introducing me to some as the person who brought Zig Ziglar to the Philippines. Success is not who you are in relation to the person sitting next to you. Success is going to where success is. And this is a successful gathering. Adrian Rogers said, failure is succeeding at the wrong things. He also said, if you don't feel the devil, you're probably walking in the same direction. So I'll leave you with this. As we close our journey, our time together, I want to leave you with this thought. 25 years from now, and some of you are saying, wow, I won't be here 25 years from now. We know, we'll just play along. this is for those of you who will. In fact, someone once asked me, he says, Krish, what do you at your funeral? I want the pastor to say, he's still moving, because I have things to do. But I love how Mr. Ziegler put it at the very end of his life. He says, don't, and I'm paraphrasing, he says, don't go all somber at the very end. that they're all so sharing melancholy, that they're talking in past tense, waiting for the casket lid to be put on. He said, come hollering and screaming and slide right into the grave and say, what a ride. Think about that statement. His last words to me in the hospital, in that one moment of lucidity, when Cindy said, listen carefully, he may just say something. See, 6 months earlier, I was having lunch with him, and I took notes. And I'll never be able to read those notes in public. I'll just cry. But I'll never forget the last words he said to me. Thank you, Lord, for this boy. I really do believe, with God as my witness, and all divinity in front of us, that our union was ordained. What are the odds that a kid born half a world away would come and meet just about every aspect of his life to be changed by one man? That's the reason you'll never hear me not address him as Mr. Ziegler. The hardest place I ever get to speak is when Tom invites me, because for me, this is hallowed ground. This is ordained. I know some of you use it as a prop and all of that other stuff for me. I carried that all over the world. For me, I will not touch it unless I'm putting it in the case to take it to the next place. You know, to the difference between him using a pump and not using a pump, we timed it down to $5,000 in retail sales at the back. That's how specific we were about how our work was. But when I carried that, I was carrying dreams. I was carrying changed lives. I was carrying healed marriages. I was carrying broken addictions. The story of life. Julie talked about the hand bleeding. I remember the hand bleeding on a stage, wrapped up in a handkerchief. He didn't stop. When we got the call that Susie was going home and she was in her last stages, I was in Chicago with him. And he looked at me and he said, it's Susie, isn't it? I said, yes, sir. He says, these people have waited. What do you think, Krish? Should I use the pump? I said, Mr. Ziegler, it's entirely your call. He says, no, you make the call. I said, well, when you use the pump, it changes lives. He said, our lives are going to be altered. I'll use it. Set it up. Story of life. And I'll leave you with these thoughts. If you ever have a chance to be a true torchbearer of legacy, do two things. With all humility, believe that you are rightfully ordained for that moment. But second, please, please pass reverence through you so he is honored. God bless.
There's nothing else to be said here. We left you a free gift. It's called Spiritual Journey. This is Mr. Ziegler's. Krish? From this day forward, I will refer to him is Mr. Ziegler.